Well, now I'm absolutely delighted to welcome back Brian Hughes, consultant solicitor of Shenfield-based Rayner Hughes. Now it seems ages since you were here last. Well, I think it was back in March, wasn't it?
Yes, I think you're right, Scott. It was quite a long time ago.
Anyway, it's always good to see you. And what subject have you chosen for our edification today?
I'm not sure whether this is edifying, but... as you probably know, we've looked at things connected with company liquidation and insolvency. So there's a bit of a link with what I'm going to talk about today, which concerns business partnerships and how this links in certain circumstances with what's known as limited liability.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, believe it or not, business partnerships, sometimes called general partnership agreements, are governed by the Partnership Act 1890, a piece of legislation which is nearly 130 years old. General partnership agreements have been superseded to a certain extent by limited liability partnerships, which are governed by the Limited Liability Partnership Act 2000. But let's start with general partnerships, which is where two or more individuals decide to carry out a certain type of business together. Clearly, their intention in that business is to make a profit. But if, for example, one of the partners is lacking in the business acumen in the chosen field, then they're more likely to lose money. And for this and a variety of other reasons, it might have been better for those involved in the enterprise to have formed a company with limited liability rather than a partnership.
So why might you decide to opt for a partnership in the first place then?
As a partnership is a contractual relationship, unlike a limited company, it doesn't need to disclose its earnings and profitability and file accounts with Companies House. Partners are also treated as self-employed for tax purposes, and this can be relevant. Individuals who've entered into general partnership with each other are called collectively a firm, and the name under which their business is carried on is known as the firm name. And there are many types of business, for example, estate agents, where disclosure of their profitability might not be helpful to them.
So what other regulations cover partnerships, Brian?
The first is that the firm, which is what it is now, must disclose the name of the partners unless the name of the firm consists of all their names. If the word company is used in the trading name, then the use of the word company is not significant from the legal perspective, nor does the word firm have any legal significance beyond the power to sue and be sued in the firm's name. The rights of the firm are the rights of the partners collectively. The liabilities are also legally the liabilities of the partners collectively and individually. Perhaps I ought to add there that the names of the partners have to be... you had to get a registered business name if the company hasn't got the names of the partners in it. But this is the crunch point as far as partnerships are concerned. The responsibility of the partners to customers and suppliers is both individual and collective. What one partner does binds all the others. So if one partner enters into a dodgy deal, all the partners will be responsible for the outcome. Every partner is an agent of the firm if that partner is acting within the scope of his actual or implied authority. Every partner is an agent of the firm and has express or implied authority to enter into contracts on behalf of the firm. That rule applies even where one partner is defrauding his other partners.
So how can you tell whether a partner is acting within his implied authority?
Partnerships can be oral agreements, but it's sensible and usual for partners to have a partnership deed. These partnership deeds spell out in detail what authority each of the partners may have. But any deed cannot get round the implied authority upon which people dealing with the partnership are entitled to rely. The 1890 Partnership Act implies certain terms if there's no partnership deed, but it's only backstop legislation. The purpose of the Partnership Act 1890 is to treat all partners fairly and equally, because a partnership is, as a relationship, demands utmost good faith. This duty of good faith applies throughout the life of the partnership until a partner's retirement. Although it's worth noting that a retired partner continues to be liable after retirement for any breaches of duty while they're a partner.
Okay, so I guess we now know the perceived advantages of a partnership agreement arrangement. So what are the downsides?
Well, first off, a partner's not required to do anything towards the running of the business and therefore doesn't have to turn up for work. All partners share profits equally, no matter how much or how little time or capital they put into the business. A partner cannot retire or be expelled. If a partner decides to leave, he or she can only do so by giving notice to the other partners. At this point, the existing partnership has to be dissolved, the assets divided, and a new partnership has to be created. And the same rule applies when a partner dies. As I've already said, all the partners are jointly and severally liable for the liabilities incurred by the business. If a debt can't be paid, then a creditor can pursue all the partners individually. Should one partner get into financial difficulties, a creditor can take assets from the partnership to settle the debt. But as I've said, all partners are agents of the business and therefore act on behalf of and bind all the partners. Another point, partners in an informal partnership may not have contemplated any provisions preventing an outgoing partner from going to work for a competitor and poaching customers, clients or employees. That's why a proper partnership deed or agreement setting out what partners can or cannot do during the partnership or once they leave the business of the partnership is essential.
Anything else?
Well, payment to a partner in the firm for a debt owing to the firm is invariably a good discharge for the debt. That can be a bit dodgy.
Mm-hmm.
Liabilities of the firm may occur where a partner acting in good faith, for example, if in the course of delivering goods to a customer, he knocks down and injures a pedestrian as a result of negligent driving. The firm may then be liable to pay compensation to the injured pedestrian. But the firm would only be liable if the partner was acting within the scope of his duty as a partner. If a creditor makes a claim against the firm and subsequently obtains judgment in his favour, he may enforce it against the assets of the firm. He's not compelled, however, to do so. He may sometimes enforce the judgment against a wealthy partner personally, because each partner is always liable to the full extent of his private assets for any debts of the partnership. If, however, one wealthy partner, or partner who can afford it, pays up the full amount of a debt due from the firm out of his own pocket, he's entitled to call upon each of the partners to repay him by way of a contribution, a proportion of the amount he's actually paid.
Now, you mentioned at the start of our chat today that a new act governing partnerships came into force in 2000. So what changes has this brought about?
Yeah, that's right. The new act is called the Limited Liabilities Partnership Act. And in effect, what this does is to permit establishment of an LLP, which is a sort of cross between a general partnership and a limited liability company. If an LLP, in an LLP, the liability of the partners is normally limited to the amount of capital, money or assets that they've put into it. To become an LLP, a minimum of two persons, and however more join them in the business as partners afterwards, have to commit themselves to signing an incorporation document. In legal terms, they all subscribe to it, and that document has to be delivered to the registrar at company's house, accompanied by a statement by either a solicitor or one of the subscribers that all the formalities have been complied with.
And just what is this incorporation in document? What does it include?
Well, the prescribed form has to contain the address of the registered office of the LLP, which must be in the UK,
mm-hmm.
state the name of the LLP, also the names of the members on the incorporation of it. It also has to state which of the members are to be designated members and whether all the members are designated members. The registrar of companies will retain the incorporation document and issue a certificate of incorporation as evidence that the LLP is properly set up and legal.
So in this case, what happens if and when there's a change in partners?
Well, unlike a general partnership, you don't have to wind it up and start again when anyone joins or leaves. Joining or leaving is a matter of agreement with the other members. Like a general partnership, members of an LLP are treated as self-employed and are subject to income tax on their trading income. They also pay NI contributions in the same way as anyone else who's self-employed. Any changes in membership must be notified to the registrar within 14 days, and any changes of address of an existing member within 28 days.
So, what's the big advantage of an LLP?
Well, although the LLP is still liable for the actions of a member when that member acts in a wrongful way outside the terms of the incorporation document or omits to do something that a partner should do, members of the LLP are not jointly and severally responsible for the actions of another member. This is because the LLP has a personality separate from its members. It's the LLP that bears any loss to the extent of the capital put into it.
And what's the position if the LLP has insufficient funds to cover a loss?
In that case, the LLP has to be wound up like any other company. It's subject to insolvency in the same way as companies.
And what liability exists to the individual partners?
Well, as I previously said, there's no further liability to the partners beyond what they've put into the LLP in terms of money or assets. And that's the beauty of it. You're only responsible, liable, for the capital or the assets, money you put into the LLP. You're protected from full collective or individual liability, okay?
Fair enough.
It's a cross. An LLP is a cross between a partnership and a limited liability company.
This is what you said before, yeah.
And it has certain advantages tax-wise and in other respects, okay?
Right. Well, many thanks for all of this, Brian. Have you decided on a topic for your next visit?
A lot of people seem to be insulting each other these days. I thought it might be appropriate to talk about defamation, libel and slander.
Oh, well, that sounds interesting. Okay, we look forward to that. Well, hopefully you'll be able to do that sometime in mid-August around the 19th, and we'll sort all of that later on.